This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Bring it fast. Bring it to the Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, now we're joined by Richard Burns, who, of course, writes for Yahoo. He's joining us to talk about Manchester City. Oh, also the Blue Moon podcast. Didn't mean to forego that. No big deals from Manchester City on this deadline day. Some people thinking that Gabriel Jesus is a January addition, but even though he's joining now, the deal was done back in the summer, I believe. But what do you think we can expect from him as he is the, quote, like a new signing, unquote?
Well, he's already in one game and 8 minutes looked very, very promising. Mm. So it's really, it'd be really easy to fall into the trap of thinking, and please forgive the pun, but it's the go-to one, but to think that he is our saviour and that everything's going to be rosy now because we've got this phenomenally talented young kid. What is bound to happen is at some point, he's bound to find some difficulties with just everything that goes along with being a young man moving to a completely new culture and a completely new league. And just the massive weight of expectation on him is a young lad who, you know, over here, there's not, and I count myself in this, there's not a whole lot of experts on Brazilian football. And yet every City fan is now an expert on Gabriel Jesus because they've watched YouTube clips of him and vines of him when he was scoring every other week for Palmeiras and his assists. Everybody's got this expectation of him through video clips that they've seen. And then he came on against Tottenham for his debut and he looked really keen. He wanted the ball. He was clearly not fazed by the occasion. He was in that 8 minutes, he had a pretty keen sense of what his teammates were doing and the right decision of when to take a man on or lay it off to a teammate. And then obviously he had his goal, which it'll sound weird this, because although he was clearly about half a yard offside, his positioning was really good. He just got a little bit too eager, I think. But his understanding of, again, where his teammates were going to take up their space in the box, where the ball was going to come across the box, he's clearly adapted to that side of things pretty quickly. So I think we can expect over time, I think we can expect a lot of him. I do worry about short-term impact when he does have what I think will be an inevitable dip because every player, particularly at his age, still really learning the trade and learning a new league. I worry that an inevitable dip will lead to criticism from our increasingly impatient supporters. But I hope not. I hope the excitement and the buzz around him lasts long enough to forgive him any issues that might arise whilst he's adapting, because the talent and his goal scoring record is there for all to see, and he's made an incredibly encouraging start. Hmm.
Yeah, I was very impressed by Gabriel Jesus in that Spurs match as well. We mentioned kind of in the lead into that Manchester City didn't technically make a move in January. This deal was done previously. Really nobody in the top six made a big splashy move. And we spoke with Steve Boniface earlier on an Arsenal club update and saying that basically nobody made a move because nobody made a move. Nobody was trying to keep up. Do you think City maybe should have done more? Or are you kind of pleased that not only City, but the whole top six kind of eased off the gas after it was a very big summer of spending?
I think from our point of view, we don't have a great history of January transfers anyway. And I think that's just something that's ingrained in the way that we act now. The last time we made a January signing was 2 years ago when we went and spent 27.5, somewhere around that, 27.5 million on Wilfred Bonny to try and fix a problem in the short term, and obviously got our fingers massively burnt. We wasted a lot of money there. The last really big January signing before that would have been Aidan Dzeko, which obviously did work out, but it took him 6 months to settle. He didn't do a whole lot in the back half of that season. So we generally don't do a lot of business in January. We tend to save it for the summer. I'm probably glad that we've stuck to that, because I think it's very, very easy, particularly, you know, everybody's screaming about the problems that City have. We have problems in defence, and they are problems that, to my mind, will only be fixed by bringing new players in, because the problem players, I don't really think have the intelligence to do what Pep wants them to. We'll only fix it with recruitment, but going doing that in January is so easy to panic buy, and we face a premium anyway, because obviously we're a very rich club, and then there's a January premium, and a lot of the best players are, the clubs don't want to let them go because they're too important to them, and they don't want to sacrifice the second half of their season, or they're already cup tied because they're playing in the Champions League, and so we'd only be getting domestic benefit of signing them. So I think you have to, there's always that thing that I think managers say when they're asked, will you be making any signings in January? You do always have to have in mind that if a deal that is just too good to be turned down becomes available and it fits your long-term aims, then yeah, you'd obviously want the club to grasp that, I suppose. But as it stands, I would rather City grin and bear their problems defensively and make the best of that until the end of the season than go and splash a load of money out on a player that might be out of favour in 6 months or might not settle in quickly, because there's just so much risk attached to it, and we've seen the one occasion in the last 5 years or so that we've really dipped into the market, it backfired massively. So I'm glad that we didn't. And then as for the rest of the top six, yeah, given that we didn't go into the market, I'm glad that our rivals haven't gone and strengthened. I've been a bit worried today about the, not that we're going to catch Chelsea, but about them going after Dembele from Celtic, because I think he probably will be a fine signing for somebody. And if he goes to them today, then it's not going to do them any damage as they pull away from us. And obviously we're still in the FA Cup with them, which would be nice to win. So any strengthening that they do wouldn't really be welcome to us. But yeah, generally, I suppose you have to be happy when your rivals don't strengthen, even taking into account the risk that I've just said. For us, there is true for anybody, the risks of signing in January. So on balance, yeah, I'm glad not to see our rivals strengthening whilst we're not. I think we've got enough about us on a level playing field to push on in the second half of the season and still cement that top four place.
Yeah, all good points there. You mentioned you don't want a six-month fix, but what are the long-term fixes? I mean, we've known that Manchester City have an aging squad for a while now. The fact that Silva and Toure have kind of reclaimed their places, the fact that the wing-backs have been aging for years and are all above 30 years old, the centre-backs still don't seem great. Bravo has obviously had his issues. Where do you think you really need to strengthen in the summer?
Well, this is the aging thing is really interesting and annoys me, because the aging process doesn't take anybody by surprise, does it? We've known that we would have, at this point in time, we have known that we would have four fullbacks over the age of 30. We've known that since we signed Sanya. And we've obviously known with Clichy, Kolarov and Zabaleta that they were all heading there before we signed Sanya. And we've never even, from what I can see, we've never looked to address it. There's a bit of talk that in the summer Pep was desperate for us to sign Hector Bellerin or Bellerin, whatever the in-vogue pronunciation is at the moment, that he was keen for him or it was nobody. And obviously that was something that never came to pass. But the bit that baffles me is City have known for 3 years that they wanted Guardiola, and they've not made any secret of that. When they announced that they'd actually managed to, you know, when they announced his appointment, they referenced negotiations that were last curtailed in 2012, they've always known that their aim was to bring Guardiola to the club. And I think they've always known that it would probably happen. And so by not signing players, and I'm not suggesting that whilst he was managing Bayern Munich, he should have been working out who he wanted at City, because clearly that wouldn't really work. But the club knew the general idea and where they were heading. And they haven't gone and signed the players that he needed, or they haven't... There's no obvious sign that they even tried to do it. And so what they've done is, when you look at the problems that Guardiola has faced this year, they've largely been with his defence. There's problems with how slow we are attacking as well, but they've largely been with his defence and with the personnel in the defence. And so Guardiola gets a fair bit of criticism from our press, because they're very sceptical about him, and every defeat or every failure is a chance to stick the knife in and for somebody to be proved right that there's something special about English football that he can't adapt to. But actually, the club, and the club being Chicky Bagaristein as CEO, or director of football, sorry, and Khaldun Al-Mubarak as chairman, the club are complicit in this failure, because they chose to keep Pellegrini in place for a year when they knew he wasn't good enough, because it made sense because they knew Pep was coming a year later. So they chose to essentially write off a season. And by not having the players in place for Guardiola when he took over, they've risked writing off another season in terms of a title challenge and really, really sort of tangible progression. So the long-term aim has to be, sign good younger players. And we have to make the focus massively in defensive areas. We're all right striker-wise, because we've got Jesus, and Iheanacho hasn't really kicked on this season, but the talent there for Pep to work with. And obviously Aguero's Aguero if he stays. There's a few rumours about that as well. But assuming he stays, we're all right striker-wise. And obviously De Bruyne, Sané, Sterling. We've got good, youngish players there to work with. But we've got a disaster of a goalkeeper and a great young centre-back in John Stones, who occasionally looks a bit out of place. But in my opinion, that's because he's so far advanced beyond the rest of the defence. He's the only defender we've got who can play Guardiola's style. And he's out of step with the rest of them, which often reflects badly on him. Kompany's injury-prone. If we could somehow keep him fit, then, OK, we'd have two solid centre-backs there. But the full-backs are, either through age, injury or intelligence, or lack of, they're a disaster that, I was going to say, is waiting to happen, but unfortunately, in Kolarov's case, and quite often in Clichy's case, they're a disaster that keep on happening. And Otamendi's occasionally brilliant, but often not. So there's just so many problems to sort out, and they're not going to be sorted by coaching. They can only be sorted by spending the money. So I probably can't tell you all the names that we need to sign and who the best young fullbacks and best young central defenders in Europe are, other than Aymeric Laporte, who we tried to sign in the summer and he chose to stay at Bilbao instead. But yeah, that's the long-term aim: improve the defence. We need players that Pep can work with, because he hasn't got that, and at the moment the battering that he takes for his defence is not completely unjustified, but largely the fingers are pointed in the wrong direction, because it's very easy to just point at the coach, isn't it? But the hierarchy at City are complicit in the problems that we have, and deliberately so, because they were so desperate for Guardiola, which I support, by the way, but they were so desperate for him that they were blind to everything else.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm really glad that you mentioned Guardiola and the long-term plan and all that stuff, because I think that's largely what the issue is, and the press seems so busy trying to show that Pep underrated the Premier League that they're kind of missing the point, which is, and I'd love to if you agree with me or if I'm just out on a limb here, but my thoughts on why City have struggled this season is A, the Premier League is much harder than it was last year, mm-hmm. and B, and I think this is the more important thing, is that Pep Guardiola came to instill a long-term plan, but is stuck with short-term players. And I love that you mentioned, they probably don't, the intelligence of the defenders, because I think a lot of the issue is that the defenders that you do have either not bought into the system or don't understand the system, or the system is counter to their natural instinct. Because that was a problem that we had under Andre Villas-Boas, is when we went out and bought the Magnificent Seven, quote-unquote, they were all good individuals, but when they came in, we were asking Paulinho to make fast passes when he was much more of a gather the ball under control, look for options, pass it on. We wanted Capu to be just a pure defensive midfielder, but he likes bombing forward, as we've seen with Watford. He has like 5 or 6 goals this season. Yeah. We brought in Kirakesh to be a defensive stabilizer when he's an absolute nutcase. But he's allowed to do that at Napoli, and he does very well not being held to a certain thing. And I just wonder if that's the issue, is that the impulse... And to be fair, it worked conversely for Sterling. It seemed like he was second-guessing everything, and then Pep has started to really get the best out of him. And I just wonder if maybe it is a tactical slash vision issue that does not mesh with the squad.
Yeah, God, there's a lot to answer there and to unpick, and you've hit upon a lot of things that I really like talking about. So, first of all, like the Sterling comparison, I've never thought of it in those terms, really, but you're absolutely right. So, Sterling... Part of the reason that he had a disappointing first year was because Pellegrini coached him into a two-touch player, and he's not that. And so as a direct example of how tactics affect a player and following direct instruction affects a player, Guardiola's allowed him to be a lot more free and play his natural game. And you're absolutely right, our defenders largely are not playing their natural game, and it shows. So the bit on intelligence... Maybe it's a bit harsh. I guess I see, and I have to take a step back sometimes because I would probably class myself as something of a Guardiola fanboy. So I do have to step back sometimes and try and work out actually some of this criticism is valid and which bits it is. He's definitely been guilty of, and he probably wouldn't see it as a criticism, he's definitely been guilty of waiting too long to accept that his defenders can't do what he wants to do. And he had to take a step back and stop messing about with the back four and switching between I've slipped into it there. He had to set it up as a back four and stop messing about playing with 3 central defenders and 2 wing backs and this idea of inverted fullbacks that we were using at the start of the season has fallen apart a little bit, not completely, but it's fallen apart a little bit. And as soon as after the defeat at Leicester, when we were an embarrassment and the defence was just absolutely hideous, he went to a back four against Watford and we won 2-0. And we weren't thrilling, but we were never under pressure either. And OK, you can say that's Watford. But then he did it against Arsenal and we were a lot better. He seems to have accepted that the likes of Otamendi and Kolarov have to play a much more basic defensive game. Doesn't mean he's abandoned his principles entirely, because Guardiola won't do that. He doesn't see football in that way, and I genuinely think he would rather be unsuccessful and be sent back to Spain as a failure than just give up on his principles, because it's so important to him. But he has dialed it back a little bit. So the bit on intelligence and whether players are playing their natural game, Otamendi is not a defender who will work well with a high press. Oh, sorry, with a high defensive line and possession-based football. Yes, he can hold on to it, and he can move the ball 10, 15 yards to pick out a teammate, but he doesn't see it in the way that, okay, if I pass the ball to John Stones, then that moves, that shifts out of the opposition's entire position up the pitch, rather than hoofing the ball. He doesn't see the game in that way. He doesn't see that we're opening up spaces and picking out spaces. And he's never going to see the game in that way. He and Kolarov don't work in a high defensive line because they don't read the game well enough and they're not fast enough. So we saw it about 6 times in 2 games, 7 times in 2 games when we conceded 3 against Chelsea followed by 4 against Leicester. A team breaks our defensive line and you leave them running through clean on goal. You leave like Willian, Jamie Vardy, Eden Hazard, all punished as free. You leave them running through clean on goal where the percentage chance of them scoring is massively in their favour rather than them missing. And we're conceding goal after goal. And then you get these stats about Bravo never saving a shot. Well, actually, the odds were very rarely in his favour. So you shatter a goalkeeper's confidence. And that's not a defence of Bravo because he's not been very good. But yeah, we've got defenders who they're just not intelligent enough. So that takes me back to the John Stones point that I made earlier. Stones gets Guardiola's play. It is natural to him. He is a possession-based footballer. He's not perfect. He does make mistakes. But you freeze frame almost any John Stones mistake, with the exception of the one at Everton that ended up not mattering because it was the fourth goal anyway. But the back pass that he messed up against Leicester, where we conceded a fourth goal, the back pass that he messed up against Southampton when we conceded a goal. You freeze frame either of those at the point that he tries to give the ball away, and then look where his teammates are stood around him, and there's no one on show. There's nobody in a good position. The Southampton one, Vincent Kompany, was in the ideal position, and at the exact moment that Stones tries to pass the ball to him, Kompany steps up. He's not in tune with what Stones is doing. And that must be so frustrating for Guardiola, because it's resulted in, at times, him having to take John Stones out of the team. He's become, like that first 10 games, Stones looked like he was going to be an absolute mainstay, and instead he's been rotated probably a lot more than he's happy with. And I honestly think it's because 90% of the time his teammates just aren't in tune with him, because he's a step ahead of them. So, yeah, Guardiola has had to... He stuck too long with trying to get players to do things that they can't do.
Do you think... Sorry, not to interrupt, but do you think the solution is working on a more short-term view with the players available, or trying to stick to the style, trying to ingrain it in the side, where you finish is where you finish, and then you address it in the summer?
It's a really difficult question to answer, because I sort of have two opinions on it. In terms of making sure that we finish in the top four, which means that we'll have a better chance of bringing in good players next summer, which means... and it obviously, you know, we'll keep the press a little bit off his back, because the press are really sceptical of Guardiola. Just as a little side point, there is an arrogance in the English media that wants the Premier League to be the league that's hardest to crack. And there's an element of truth in it, but Germany isn't exactly the same as Spain. And he went and adapted there, and he worked out what his deficiencies were, why he couldn't just turn Bayern Munich into Barcelona. And he adapted and created a hell of a football team. There's no reason that he can't adapt to the Premier League, because Guardiola sees the game so well. He's a very, very intelligent coach. And there's elements of the press here where there's either people who fully believe in Guardiola and expected him to completely revolutionise the Premier League, which he's not going to do quite, or there's those that expect him to be a failure because he can't adapt to how special the Premier League is. And people on both sides have such a desperate desire to be right that it clouds the judgment of him both ways. So after 10 games, he was the Messiah. And then after 20 games, he's a flop and he's Fraudiola and all that ridiculous stuff. So I want him to achieve a level of success that buys him a bit of credit with the press, that keeps him off his back. Because I don't want that negativity sort of permeating the club. But there's an element of me thinks, if he isn't true to himself and does go to a more simple game and abandons a little bit of his principles, then the short-term step back of that could have quite a long-term effect. Like, will the players respect him for that? If they see that they have a bit more success with that, then next season, when he tries changing things again, they're going to be a bit more sceptical of it. They're going to see, well, we had that 10-game run last year where we were conceding goals to everyone. We conceded 4 goals to a team that are in a relegation battle. We conceded 4 goals to a fairly average Everton team. But then we went to this basic style that we know a bit better, and we had a bit more success with it, and it stabilised our season. Like, I don't want anything to happen that's going to stop the players buying into Guardiola, because one of the points that you made earlier, he's been given such a remit at the club that it's not about short-term success. Guardiola's here to give City an identity that we don't currently have. And it's almost like he's been given carte blanche to, I don't know, maybe almost artificially create us an identity like Johan Cruyff did at Barcelona. He's got such a power base at City. He's been given such a huge amount of power to build an identity and a level of success that we've not seen before at our club, that I worry that any short-term step back from that, even no matter how small it might be, I worry about him deviating from what he wants to do. So to answer your question, I honestly don't know. I don't know what I'd rather. I know it's infuriating watching the team defend as badly as they have been, but the ramifications of him stepping away from what he wants to do might end up in the long term being more damaging. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know if it might sound like I'm talking nonsense, but I do. I worry that he could lose a bit of respect and lose a bit of credibility by stepping away from what he wants to do.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, you lose that kind of leadership quality if you can be seen as stepping down from your guns.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my weird take on that.
Version of what I spent 6 minutes saying.
No, you're fine. Yours was much more detailed, to be fair. So, with all of these issues, I kind of was aiming here, but we didn't quite get there. But we'll just straight up address it now. As a City fan, do you think you're more in the you'll catch up to the title race pack? Do you think you're going to make top four? Or do you think it could just be top six and that's okay?
It could just be top six, but that's probably not okay. I don't think we're realistically in the title race, not only because of how far behind Chelsea we are. And what is it? Is it 12 points now?
Possibly, but they have Liverpool and Arsenal in their next two. So, like, kind of everyone's still...
That's true, but we were like 6 points ahead of them after 8 games. So the point swing in such a small space of time, relatively, is pretty incredible. And to expect it to swing back in the other direction when we are as vulnerable as we are to daft defeats and conceding daft goals is too much to expect. And not only that, even if Chelsea drop the points and we start to make them up, well, there's still other 3 teams to overhaul, which it's not just as simple as hunting Chelsea down. So I don't realistically expect us to be in a proper title challenge now, but I also hope that we can cling on to the coattails just in case something miraculous happens. But we're definitely good enough for the top four. If that isn't an absolute minimum aim, and to be fair, it should be top three, because we don't want to have to the qualification round for the Champions League again. It doesn't do anybody any favours. We're good enough for the top three. It's just about achieving a little bit of consistency and finding a bit of a balance in the defence, which is far easier said than done. But I would be extremely disappointed were we not to finish top four, because I think that would be... I mean, you always finish where you deserve, but it would be a false representation of the quality that we've got. We'd be letting ourselves down massively.
Fair enough. All right, well, thank you so much for taking the time out. Why don't you tell the folks where they can find you?
Yeah, I write 2 articles a week specifically on City for Yahoo Sport UK, and I am one of the rotating members of the Blue Moon podcast, which is released every Friday and is, as you might guess, a specific Manchester City podcast.
All right, thanks again. Hope we speak soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.